Welcome to the Army Resilience Roundup podcast. I am your host, Lataria Walker. The Army can be a tough profession. Mix in additional responsibilities like leading troops, attending college, maintaining a home, parenting, keeping up with finances, basically living life. How can we successfully manage everything? How can we not just cope, but learn, grow, and thrive? Resilience. That's it. Resilience is the ability to persevere, adapt, and grow in dynamic or stressful environments. Resilience encompasses internal motivation, persistence, and how soldiers revitalize, recover, and adapt in order to respond constructively to challenges in their daily lives. Training and education empowers leaders and soldiers to demonstrate resilience. When individuals gain experience in applying these skills, it enables cohesive team building and drives readiness. The Army Resilience Roundup podcast is a place where you can find resources that will help you maintain your resilience. You are resilient. Welcome to the Army Resilience Roundup podcast, episode 3. I am Lataria Walker, your podcast host for today. Our topic for today is Out of the Ashes, Personal Reflections on Resilience and Mental Health. We will be discussing suicide prevention, the four crisis response components, mental health, and the ways leaders can foster a climate of resilience. Our guest will share how a strong resilience foundation can lead to a steady state of mental health. Today, our guest is Lieutenant Colonel Jacob Kuhl, a detachment chief for the Defense Threat Reduction Agency located in Cape Town, Germany. Lieutenant Colonel Kuhl, thank you so much for joining us today. Please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you so much for having me today. It's such an honor and privilege to be here to share my story and reflections as part of this effort. I've been in the Army for about 20 years. I received my commission from North Georgia College and State University back in 2002. After completing the Explosive Ordnance Disposal School, I served a variety of command and staff positions within that career field. I've had joint assignments at the NATO school, Oberammergau, Germany, at the Joint Special Operations Command, and served as a liaison officer to the U.S. Special Operations Command. I've just completed Senior Service College this past year, serving as a U.S. Army War College Fellow at the NATO Defense College in Rome, Italy. I have had deployments to Iraq, South Korea, and Afghanistan. But most importantly, out of all of that, I've been married to my bride, the former Katie Bliss. It'll be exactly 20 years next month. And I'm the proud father of two boys, Jake and William.
Wow, what a pretty impressive career. Thank you for your service, sir, and thank you so much for sharing. Sir, tell us your story.
So I guess it really began about 2.5 years ago while I was deployed to Afghanistan. I was woken up at about 2 a.m. in my room where I was notified that my 16-year-old son's sudden, very unexpected death occurred. My wife and I would later learn that he had an undiagnosed heart condition that we didn't know about. But first, just a little bit about my late son, Jake. You know, he was my better in every aspect of life. I think by all measures, he was exceptional and had an extremely bright future. Had all A's, never got a B, tested into multiple gifted programs. He took 3 AP courses as a sophomore in high school. He did 2 summers at Duke Tip. He always scored in the top tier on standardized tests. He was fearless in everything he did. Extremely hard work ethic, but also a tender heart to help others. And, you know, his inspiring motto lives on to this day, grind, don't stop. At the time I was notified, my wife, Katie, was at the hospital with close friends, just in real shock from all the events that took place as I began to make my way home from deployment. Sadly, but ironically, I arrived back the day before Father's Day. And through this whole events, overwhelming emotions about the past, things I had to do in the present, and a future lost just hit me like a freight train, with my family upended instantly. You know, from the past, regret set in for all my failings as a father, as I reflected. Missed opportunities, the time that I thought I would have with him vanished overnight. I had to make decisions and do many things I never could have imagined I would have to do. My wife and I had to decide, do we bury him? Do we cremate him? Where do we go to pick out an urn for him? Where do I even begin to write a eulogy, let alone have, you know, the strength to give it? And unfortunately, even battle with healthcare insurance to approve and pay for his ambulance and hospital trip. Looking towards the future, just that crushing disappointment that I wouldn't see him graduate high school, college, get married, have kids and a family of his own. In the first days that I returned from home, I remember thinking how eerily quiet the house was, and how I would give anything I had to hear my two sons fight again. It was during this time my mind went into a fog. I couldn't think straight, move slower. I recognized, I knew I needed help, but I didn't know where to go or what to do. And it was in this scene, in this aftermath, that I would put my wife and I into the high-risk category for suicide. To be frank, I wished for death many nights. I lost hope in the will to live. As I reflect on why we didn't become another statistic, there were things that contributed to the larger healing process that I'm just not seeing in the main dialogue. For example, our recovery was bigger than just calling an 800 number and finding a counselor. There were different bits and pieces that combined together, you know, presented a more complete recovery process. And then when I look at the heartbreaking suicide statistics amongst service members and veterans, it really caused me to put pen to paper and kind of to map out how we came out of that tragic event. But I think while this, you know, the story begins in tragedy, I think the recovery process from all this is an even greater story to tell about how quality leadership that I had, personal resilient habits that my wife and I built up over years and years and years, and a more comprehensive crisis response approach that truly brought my wife and I out of some very dark places at that time.
Sir, thank you so much for sharing your story. This is a story of, you know, tragedy and triumph. And while we can never, you know, plan for the unthinkable, please tell us some healthy examples of healthy coping mechanisms that can be practiced when individuals face such a tragedy as you have.
I think everybody's different. You know, I think the proof is on display when a handful of folks take the different personality tests and it comes out that everybody looks at life differently. We process emotions differently. We, you know, recharge mentally differently. So I don't think there's a cookie cutter approach per se, but I think a couple of things are some common threads as far as healthy coping mechanisms. I think the first would be, you know, leaning on your resiliency foundation, you know, making sure you're staying fit, you're getting enough sleep, you have a good diet, you know, those friendships, those friendship networks that you have to lean on, you know, spiritual community connections that you have, and things of that nature are so critical. And that's really the true meaning of resilience, is the ability to withstand and bounce back from, you know, from what life throws at you. I also think it's important, you know, when someone is facing a tragedy, that it's important to recognize that, hey, I'm kind of in a vulnerable state here mentally and emotionally. I think it's critical to avoid high risk behaviors, you know, excessive drinking, other, you know, addictive behaviors, gambling, things like that, or making decisions that have long-term consequences. You know, something that may make sense in the moment will truly have long-term consequences. So I think just recognizing when you're in that fragile state to just, you know, address that too. I think another healthy coping mechanism is to understand that it's okay to let others help you. I've always been a big self-reliance guy. You know, when you're in a tragedy and you have true friends and family that love you and care about you, it's okay to let them help you through that process. It's also important, I think, to find outlets to process your emotions. Unfortunately, I don't think it's as simple as a straight line direction to go through a process. There's going to be setbacks. There's going to be that two steps forward, one step back, or, you know, one step forward, two steps back as far as your progress. And, you know, it's okay to, if that happens, really finding those outlets to help you process those emotions, whether you like going to the gym to work out or doing an activity to remember or honor. For example, like my wife and I, every Thanksgiving, we like to do the turkey trot run as a family, because that used to be our thing with Jake. So that, I think that's another outlet, a healthy outlet to kind of cope through that. Yeah, hobbies, you know, whatever that is, I think is a good creative way to process that. And then finally, I think is, you know, use that pain that you have to help others, because what that does is, in my mind, it's a good distraction in the sense that for a moment your focus is off of you and your situation, and you're in the moment helping somebody else. And when you look at the way we're designed with science and getting that dopamine in there, I just think that's just another great healthy way to cope.
Sir, you mentioned allowing others to help you. How can individuals identify when a friend or a family member or even a colleague is experiencing crisis? How do we know that? What are the signs?
That's a hard question. And to be honest, outside of knowing a tragic event has taken place, I don't have a definite answer, because I think through this, all people are wired differently. And we all respond in our own unique ways, which I think results in a very complex problem trying to answer. I think it's important, though, to understand that, you know, some people wear their emotions on their sleeves, and they're an open book, which makes it really easy to recognize the signs, whether, you know, they're angry, they're frustrated, they're sad, or they're in, you know, down in the dumps kind of thing, to where you can, you know, ask some of those questions or try to intervene. But unfortunately, there's other folks out there that they don't exhibit any external signs. And I know of several personal examples that at no point did they signal anything differently in the way they held themselves or reacted with others. And then even some people even are in denial that they're in problems, and even when they are confronted or ask questions from loved ones, they, you know, deny it. Therefore, I think first off, it's important to understand that I think it starts with the individual themselves to seek help from a friend, a family member, or a colleague perspective, all you can do is show your genuine care for them and their well-being, and that you'll be there for them. Thinking of my own situation, I had friends, different levels of friendship, whether it was a shared faith or just a good witty banter about NFL football, that really just made for a good recovery. But I think it's important to be as sensitive as possible, and even the smallest signs to just have those genuine conversations. I know some people, they can go deep and, you know, very thoughtful and deep very quickly. Others can't, you know, depending upon your relationships. Making time for those deep conversations, I think, will help heal a lot of that out as far as potential problems.
Yes, thank you for that. Thank you for sharing that. Sir, what are the four crisis response components?
Thank you for asking that. And in the debate of mental health and, you know, recovery, there's bits and pieces to this, but really how I kind of sketched this out in my own mind was just reflecting on my own recovery, where we found a counselor. It was great, but we wouldn't have recovered as completely as we could have. So I think there's four components. And if you think of how a Kevlar vest or 550 cord is designed, these four components, when they're nested together, strengthens a recovery process that's much stronger than the sum of its own parts. One or two of components alone really can provide that complete healing process. And depending upon the day, you may need more or less of one another. The first one is your close friends and family. They know you. You have a history. You have a past. You know them. There's a level of trust that you have with them that you don't have with anyone else. And they can really provide that empathy and comfort you need. A lot of times, your close family and friends cannot fully understand your situation or provide that professionally qualified counsel or proven strategies to pull you through those dark times. So that's why the second component is seeking out that professional counseling. Before going through this process, I thought, you know, every counselor was created equal. You could just find one in the phone book and you're good. But after my own experience, I see it more as a relationship between yourself and the counselor. There needs to be a level of trust, and it needs to be the right fit. And if it's not there, then I would highly recommend finding a professional counselor that you do have that type of trust and relationship with. For me also, it was important to find a professional counselor that actually experienced their own tragic loss in their lives, because I just didn't want the textbook answer. I wanted them to really, you know, have felt that counsel that they were giving me. The third piece is support groups. Now, I know being vulnerable and sharing intimate details with strangers is very uncomfortable. I'm not one of those people that likes to go to groups and sit in a circle and talk about feelings. But in this case, it was so important to find a group. In my case, we found two. We linked up with folks that walked in my shoes before, that could provide me those pragmatic strategies or helpful techniques of, hey, when I was feeling this, this is what we did. So I could learn from them. And what that did is it also made me feel that I wasn't alone, or I'm the only one feeling this way through that piece. And then the fourth is to help others. This was a recommendation after my 13-week grief share program that I took, was in the process of grief, going through and understanding helpful strategies, go out and find someone else and help them. And through that, you will provide you with your own healing. But as I started to peel that back a little more, I believe this applies to everyone's mental health and not just someone experiencing loss. You know, like I said, you look at the brain, you get that dopamine surge, the happy pills. When you look at the hierarchy of the Maslow's hierarchy of levels of love and belonging, esteem and self-actualization, you start achieving that through finding a passion of your own and you're helping others. And additionally, that's just a good distraction from your own problems. And it helps you focus on meeting someone else's needs, even if it's only for a momentary time.
Thank you for that, sir. As we near our close, what is the most important takeaway you learned from your own mental health journey?
I think it starts with yourself, you know, individually. You know, I think we're each responsible to develop our own resilient habits every day. And we're responsible for improving our own mental health and how critical it is to have the courage and the perseverance to seek out that when we need it.
Thank you, Lieutenant Colonel Cole, for joining us today. And thank you for sharing your story of trials and triumphs with our listeners. In your closing remarks, would you please offer one piece of advice that you would give to someone who may be facing a tragedy or a trial right now at this moment?
I can think of, in the spirit of keeping things simple, I think three big things come to mind as I reflect on my own experiences. Is the first one, kind of those four crisis response components: relying on close family and friends, seeking out professional counseling, finding a support group, and helping others is so critical to a complete recovery. The second would be, I would have never guessed or expected the outpouring of love and support that my family received after Jake's death. And I think that caused me to really believe that there's more people than you know or expect that will be there for you when you need it. And to that end, the third would be, just know that you are not alone in your struggle.
Thank you, sir. That is a fantastic note to end on. We are not alone. We should reach out to family. We should reach out to friends. Thank you again for participating in our podcast today. Thank you for sharing your story of trials and triumphs. Thank you, listeners, for joining us today for episode 3 of the Army Resilience Roundup podcast. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you for joining this month's Army Resilience Roundup podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. Please continue to follow the Army Resilience Directorate on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Remember, stay resilient.